A sloth, a donkey, and a curious human send a prompt and see what they're doing. One hits a record with a question on his mind. Two brothers pick it up, see what they find. Corn takes his time, Herman's got the facts. Back and forth, they never hold back. My weird prompts, come on in, that's where we begin. My weird prompts, glad you're here.
This episode was generated using artificial intelligence. Please verify facts.
Daniel writes, and I'm going to read this one in full because the setup matters. He says, I've been thinking a lot lately about storage optimization, discovering the fascinating world of Euroboxes and industrial storage systems, and coming across systems ranging from slanted picking bins to Euroboxes that have changed how I perceive the design of my everyday environment. The type of things that have been commonplace in fulfillment centers and warehouses for years don't receive much celebration. They're not glamorous. But collectively, the systems and the logic that underpins them, like distinguishing between quick access versus deep storage, and thinking about how your body is going to interact with things you reach for, is quite impressive. He goes on. I was poking around GitHub yesterday looking for logistics and supply chain related projects and came across quite a number of Python programs and other tools specifically designed for things like pallet optimization and picking route optimization. Things that were very code and mathematics heavy, which flips the perception that warehousing is just about storing lots of stuff anywhere on its head. And then he connects it to something older. With that introduction out of the way, I thought it'd be worthwhile talking about the history of warehousing. Jews read the Torah portion every year, and some of the chapters it recounts are, and I don't exaggerate, lessons in the importance of dry goods warehousing as a means of buffering against the risk of famine in the land of Egypt. The Torah thankfully spares us some of the grisly details of what happens when this goes wrong, like weevils. But I find it fascinating that the concept and utility of warehousing and using stockpiles as a risk mitigation strategy against natural disasters was already of concern in the ancient world. Today, famine-prone regions create stockpiles. Let's talk about how long humans have been thinking about and executing upon those unglamorous facilities where things are stored, whether for commerce, military purposes, or disaster preparation, from the earliest times through to the present. A lot of ground, but I'm confident you two can handle it. So, let's unbox the warehouse, from Joseph Silos to slotting algorithms.
The thing about warehousing that most people miss, and Daniel's right to flag this, is that it's been a sophisticated engineering discipline for literally thousands of years. We walk past shelves and pallets and never register that someone designed the height of that shelf based on how far a human arm reaches without bending.
The invisible infrastructure of civilization. We ignore it until the toilet paper runs out, and then suddenly everyone's an expert on supply chains.
And that's the core tension. Warehousing is simultaneously one of the oldest organized human activities and one of the most mathematically intense fields in modern operations research. The same civilization that built the pyramids also built grain silos with raised floors for air circulation. The same kind of mind that optimizes a neural network today optimizes picking routes through a million square foot fulfillment center.
So what we're going to trace is that arc, from the earliest stockpiles where the math was implicit, embedded in the architecture itself, through to the explicit mathematics of bin packing and traveling salesman problems that run modern warehouse software. And then we'll extract what any of this means for someone standing in their kitchen wondering where to put the coffee mugs.
Why does something so unglamorous attract so much sophisticated engineering? That's the question underneath Daniel's prompt, I think. The answer is that storage is never just storage. It's always a bet on the future, and the cost of getting that bet wrong is measured in famine, in military defeat, in millions of dollars of wasted labor.
To understand why a warehouse is a mathematical marvel, we have to start where it all began, with grain, famine, and the first stockpiles.
Genesis chapter 41. Pharaoh has a dream. 7 fat cows, 7 gaunt cows, 7 healthy ears of grain, 7 thin ears. Joseph interprets it, 7 years of plenty followed by 7 years of famine. And his recommendation isn't prayer, not migration, it's warehousing. Build granaries. Store 20% of the harvest during the good years. The plan is specific, it's quantitative, and it works.
Daniel's point about the Torah being a genuine lesson in dry goods warehousing as risk mitigation. He's not exaggerating. The text describes a systematic stockpiling operation. They stored grain in cities. They stopped measuring because the quantity was beyond counting. This is strategic storage at civilizational scale.
And the principle it demonstrates is what we now call buffering. A warehouse exists to decouple supply from demand in time. The harvest comes once a year, but people eat every day. Without storage, you get feast and famine in lockstep with the seasons. With storage, you smooth the curve.
This is the same logic as a RAM cache, by the way, or a message queue in a distributed system. You're absorbing a bursty input and releasing it at a steady output rate. The ancient Egyptians didn't have computer science vocabulary, but they built the buffer.
What's remarkable is how quickly the physical design got sophisticated. The Romans took this further than anyone. The Latin word is horium, plural horea. It means a granary or warehouse. The Horrea Galba in Rome was a massive imperial warehouse complex, and we have remains of Horrea at Ostia Antica that show genuinely sophisticated climate-aware design.
Raised floors for air circulation.
Raised floors suspended on pillars so air could flow underneath the grain. Thick walls for temperature stability. Careful organization by commodity type, different sections for grain, for olive oil, for wine. The Horrea at Ostia had these long, narrow rooms with the entrance at one end, which meant you could organize by age. New stock goes in the back. Old stock gets pulled from the front. First in, first out, 2,000 years before anyone coined the acronym FIFO.
Wait, they were doing FIFO rotation in Roman granaries?
The layout enforces it. You physically can't reach the new stock without pulling the old stock first. The architecture is the algorithm.
The design doesn't just permit good practice. It makes bad practice impossible. That's more sophisticated than half the kitchen pantries in America.
And this is the thing about ancient warehousing that flips the modern assumption. We tend to think of progress as moving from primitive to sophisticated. But Roman Horrea had features, passive climate control, FIFO enforcing layout, commodity segregation, that we had to consciously relearn. The medieval period actually lost some of this knowledge. Grain storage in the Middle Ages was often worse than it had been under Rome.
The Dark Ages were literally darker in the granary.
Yes. Rot and vermin were bigger problems. The Romans understood that you designed the building as a system. The raised floor isn't just a floor. It's a ventilation system, a moisture barrier, a pest deterrent, all in one architectural decision.
You mentioned military logistics as a driver. That's the other thread, right? It's not just famine buffering. Armies need warehouses too.
Massive ones. Napoleon's famous line, an army marches on its stomach. Whether he said it exactly or not, the principle drove military organization for millennia. Roman legions had supply depots along their marching routes. The capacity to project force was directly limited by the capacity to stockpile provisions forward of the army's position. A general who didn't understand warehousing was a general who lost.
And then the shift to commerce, the Dutch East India Company.
The VOC warehouses in Amsterdam are a turning point. These aren't state granaries for famine relief. They're not military depots. They're commercial enterprises. The warehouse becomes a profit center. The VOC built massive multi-story warehouses along the canals, and they had to solve a problem the Romans never faced, throughput at commercial scale. Ships arriving constantly, goods needing to be unloaded, stored, repacked, shipped out again. This is where warehouse design starts to become about labor efficiency, not just preservation.
The dockside warehouses of London and Liverpool in the 18th and 19th centuries. Same logic, even bigger scale.
And they're multi-story, which introduces a vertical dimension to the optimization problem. Heavy goods on the ground floor, lighter goods above, goods that need crane access near the loading doors. The building itself becomes a sorting algorithm.
Let me pull out two design principles that Daniel flagged, because they're the ones that run all the way through from Roman Horrea to Amazon fulfillment centers, quick access versus deep storage, and the body interface.
Quick access versus deep storage is the fundamental distinction. In a Roman horium, the front of the room held what you needed regularly, the back held the long-term reserves. In a modern warehouse, we call this slotting, assigning items to locations based on how frequently they're picked. The fast movers go in the most accessible positions. The slow movers go in deep storage. Same principle, same logic, different vocabulary.
and the body interface. This is where Daniel's slanted picking bin comes in.
The Gravity Flow Rack. It's a beautiful piece of design. The bin is tilted forward, so when you pull an item from the front, the next item slides down to take its place. The picker never has to reach into the bin, never has to stretch. The items present themselves at the front edge, right in the golden zone.
The golden zone being waist to shoulder height.
It's the zone where a human can reach without bending, stretching, or twisting. Anything in that zone is a low-cost pick. Anything above shoulder height or below waist height costs more in time and ergonomic strain. The Gravity Flow Rack keeps items perpetually in that zone without the picker ever having to adjust.
So you're designing the shelf around the body, not asking the body to adapt to the shelf.
And this is where warehouse design gets humane, in a way that's invisible until you notice it. A well-designed picking station minimizes the distance between the picker's hand and the next item. Every inch of unnecessary reach over the course of thousands of picks per shift is real physical toll. The slanted bin, the gravity feed, the positioning of fast movers at waist height. These are ergonomic decisions that compound into either injury rates or productivity gains.
The Romans didn't have OSHA, but they had raised floors and FIFO layouts. Some of this is just, good design is good design, and it persists because bodies don't change.
Bodies don't change. The human shoulder is at the same height it was in Augustus's Rome. The distance from fingertip to elbow is the same. The principles that make a storage system comfortable and efficient for a human body are basically constants.
So the ancient world got the principles right. But what happens when you scale this up to a million SKUs and 1,000 pickers? That's where the math gets serious.
Daniel mentioned poking around GitHub and finding Python tools for pallet optimization and picking route optimization. This is the pivot. The modern warehouse is a computational problem before it's a physical one. The software decides where everything goes and how people move through the space, and the mathematics underneath those decisions is hard.
Pallet optimization. What's the actual problem?
You have a set of boxes of different sizes. You need to pack them onto a pallet. A standard 40 by 48 inch footprint with height constraints, in a way that maximizes space utilization and keeps the stack stable. This is a variant of the bin packing problem, which is NP hard. There's no algorithm that finds the perfect solution in reasonable time as the number of boxes grows. You can't just try every arrangement.
NP hard means the computation time explodes exponentially with the number of items.
Right. So real-world pallet optimization tools don't try to find the perfect solution. They use heuristics, rules of thumb that get you close enough, fast enough. Things like guillotine cuts, where you imagine slicing the pallet into layers and packing each layer independently. Or shelf-based packing, where you build horizontal shelves of boxes. These heuristics run in milliseconds, and typically get within a few percent of optimal.
So it's not that we solved the math. We just got good at approximating it.
And for a warehouse shipping 10,000 pallets a day, 98% optimal is worth millions of dollars. The difference between a pallet that's 70% full and one that's 95% full, multiplied by thousands of pallets, is entire truckloads you don't have to pay for.
Picking route optimization. That's the other half of Daniel's GitHub discovery. You've got a picker with a list of 50 items scattered across a warehouse. What's the shortest path?
The traveling salesman problem, applied to warehouse aisles. And warehouses have structure that makes it slightly easier than the general case. You're constrained to aisles, you can't walk through shelves. The classic heuristic is the S-shape or serpentine route. You enter an aisle, traverse it fully, exit the far end, move to the next aisle that has picks, traverse it in the opposite direction. You snake through the warehouse.
So you're not doubling back. You're always moving forward through the space.
More advanced systems use dynamic routing that adapts in real time. If one aisle is congested with other pickers or robots, the system reroutes you. But the core insight is the same. The warehouse is a graph, the pick locations are nodes, and you're solving for the shortest Hamiltonian path through the subset of nodes you need to visit.
Hamiltonian path, visiting each node exactly once. This is the kind of thing that sounds academic until you realize it's saving Amazon millions of dollars a year in walking time.
Walking is the single biggest labor cost in a traditional warehouse. Pickers spend something like 60% of their time just walking between locations. Shaving 10% off walking distance is a direct labor savings that drops to the bottom line.
And this is where the warehouse management system comes in. The WMS is the brain.
The WMS does slotting, deciding where each SQ lives. The standard framework is ABC analysis, which is just the Pareto principle applied to inventory. Typically, about 20% of your SKUs generate 80% of your picks. Those are your A items. They go in the golden zone in the most accessible locations with the shortest travel paths. B items are the next tier. C items, the long tail of products that rarely get ordered, go in deep storage, high shelves, far corners.
This is what Daniel's getting at when he says warehousing isn't just storing stuff anywhere. The slotting logic is dynamic. It changes as demand shifts.
And that's the static versus dynamic storage distinction. Static slotting means every SKU has a fixed home. Dynamic slotting means the system can reassign locations based on changing demand patterns. If a product suddenly goes viral, the WMS moves it from deep storage to the golden zone overnight.
This maps directly to memory management in an operating system. Static allocation versus dynamic paging.
It's the same abstraction. You have a finite physical space, RAM, or warehouse floor, and you're deciding what gets the fast access locations and what gets swapped out to slower storage. The algorithms are different, but the problem structure is identical. Computer scientists and warehouse engineers are solving the same fundamental puzzle.
Which means when Daniel's looking at these Python projects on GitHub, he's looking at the point where two disciplines converge. Operations research meets software engineering, applied to cardboard boxes.
And the tools are accessible now. There are open source libraries for three-dimensional bin packing that you can install with the package manager. You feed them box dimensions and pallet constraints. They spit out a packing plan. The math is still NP hard, but the implementation is wrapped in a clean API.
The barrier to entry for optimizing a small warehouse, or even a garage, has dropped through the floor.
Completely. A small business with a few hundred SKUs can run slotting analysis on a laptop. That was enterprise-only software 15 years ago.
Let's talk about the human-robot interface, because this is where the optimization problem shifts fundamentally. Goods to person versus person to goods.
Traditional warehouses are person to goods. The picker walks to the shelf. In a goods to person system, autonomous mobile robots bring entire shelving units to a stationary picker. The picker stands at a station, the robot arrives with the shelf, the picker grabs the item, the robot takes the shelf away, the next robot arrives.
You've inverted the whole model. The human doesn't move. The inventory comes to the human.
The optimization problem changes completely. You're no longer optimizing walking paths. You're optimizing robot fleet scheduling. Which robot goes to which shelf, in what order, to minimize the picker's wait time between arrivals? It's a queuing theory problem now, not a traveling salesman problem.
The golden zone becomes even more important, because the picker is stationary. You can design the station perfectly around the body, because the body never has to leave it.
The ergonomics are dramatically better. No walking, no bending, no reaching into deep shelves. The shelf presents itself at the optimal height and angle. Pick rates go up, injury rates go down. But the computational complexity doesn't go away. It just moves from the physical layout to the fleet coordination algorithm.
This is the knock-on effect Daniel's prompt points toward. These tools flick the perception that warehousing is just storing stuff anywhere. The math is real, the constraints are real, and the cost of a bad slotting decision is measurable.
It's measurable in labor hours, in error rates, in shipping delays. If a fast-moving SKU is in deep storage, every single pick costs extra seconds. Multiply by thousands of picks per day and you're burning labor budget on walking. If two items that are frequently ordered together are stored on opposite sides of the warehouse, you're doubling the travel for every combined order.
There's an entire discipline of affinity analysis, figuring out which items tend to be ordered together and storing them near each other. Diapers and baby wipes, phone cases and screen protectors.
Amazon calls it chaotic storage, counterintuitively. Items that are frequently bought together are deliberately scattered because if they're all in one bin, a single picker can grab them all quickly. But the system tracks the affinities and places those scattered bins near each other along the pick path. It looks random to a human observer, but it's anything but.
Chaos with a purpose. That's basically the slogan for modern logistics.
It works because the WMS is the only thing that needs to know where anything is. the picker just follows the screen. The system can reorganize the entire warehouse overnight, and the pickers won't notice. They just go where the handheld tells them to go.
All of this sounds like industrial engineering, but the punchline is that you're already running a warehouse. It's called your kitchen.
Every principle we've discussed applies at domestic scale. The golden zone is why your coffee mug should be at waist height and the turkey roaster lives above the cabinets. The cost of a touch is why you don't bury the salt behind three other spices you use once a year.
Daniel mentioned neuroboxes, changing how he perceives his everyday environment. That's the moment where you realize your closet is just a poorly slotted warehouse.
You can fix it with the same logic. The first thing I'd tell anyone is to apply the velocity test. For 1 week, notice what you actually reach for, not what you think you use, what you actually use. Those items belong in the golden zone, waist to shoulder, arms reach, no bending, no step stool.
The stuff you reach for daily versus the stuff you theoretically own.
The gap between those two categories is where most domestic clutter lives. You think you need the waffle iron accessible because you own it. But if you use it twice a year, it's C-tier inventory. It belongs in deep storage. Give that prime real estate to the French press you use every morning.
The second principle is the explicit distinction between quick access and deep storage. Daniel flagged this. Your daily use items should be in what a warehouse would call the picking face. Visible, reachable, retrievable with one touch.
One touch retrieval is the goal. You open the cabinet, you grab the thing, you close the cabinet. If you have to move something to reach something else, that's a second touch. If you have to bend down or get a stool, that's additional cost. Over a year of coffee making, those touches compound into real time and real frustration.
The cost of a touch is the third principle. Every time you handle an item, move it, search for it, put it back. That's labor. Design your space to minimize touches for high-frequency items.
This is why clear containers are better than opaque bins for things you access regularly. Seeing the item is zero touches. Opening a lid and rummaging is multiple touches. It's also why the slanted picking bin is genius. The item presents itself. You don't search, you don't reach, you just take.
For the technically inclined, Daniel's GitHub discovery is a real rabbit hole worth going down. There are open source pallet optimization libraries, Python packages for three-dimensional bin backing, and root optimization tools that you can absolutely use to model your own pantry as a mini warehouse.
You probably don't need a traveling salesman solver for your spice cabinet. But the exercise of thinking about your space in these terms, what are my A items, where is my golden zone, what's my pick path from the stove to the fridge to the sink? That exercise will surface inefficiencies you've been living with for years without noticing.
The meta lesson is that unglamorous systems are often the most engineered. The warehouse is a testament to how much thought goes into the things we never notice. Every shelf height, every aisle width, every slotting decision represents someone's careful optimization work.
The principles are ancient. Joseph in Egypt understood that storage is a bet against an uncertain future. Roman engineers understood that architecture can enforce good practice. Modern warehouse software understands that the difference between profit and loss is often measured in seconds per pick. Same thread, different tools.
The question I'm left with. As automation advances, do the human-centric principles like the golden zone and the cost of a touch become obsolete? Or do they just get re-encoded into robot algorithms?
They don't become obsolete. They migrate. In a fully automated warehouse, the golden zone is still the optimal height for a robotic arm's range of motion. The cost of a touch becomes the cost of a pick, the energy and time required for a robot end effector to grasp an item. The principles are the same. The body they're designed around just changes from flesh to steel.
The warehouse of 2030, fully autonomous, self-optimizing, invisible to the consumer, will still be running the same core logic Joseph used. Buffer against risk, optimize access, minimize waste.
The grain silo and the robot fleet are the same idea, separated by 4,000 years of engineering refinement. The math got more explicit, the scale got bigger, but the problem hasn't changed. How do you put things away so you can get them back when you need them, as cheaply and reliably as possible?
That's the cutting room floor detail I wanted to land on. The Horia Galbi in Rome wasn't just big. It was a state-owned complex that stored grain, olive oil, wine, and marble, and it was administered by a dedicated bureaucracy that tracked inventory levels and distributed to the population. The Romans had warehouse managers with job titles and reporting structures. The unglamorous back office is as old as the empire.
The more things change.
If you enjoyed this deep dive into the invisible infrastructure of civilization, leave us a review and tell us what unglamorous system you'd like us to unbox next.
Thanks to our producer, Hilbert Flumingtop.
This has been My Weird Prompts.
Find us at myweirdprompts.com or email the show at show@myweirdprompts.com.
We'll be back soon. Go reorganize your pantry.
This episode's script was written by DeepSeek V4 Pro, with text-to-speech by Chatterbox.
Thanks for listening to our show, My Weird Prompts, where odd thoughts go. From sloth slow takes to facts on cue, we chase the strange and follow through. Some nights it's news, some nights it's lore, a thought you've never heard before. The hosts dig in, the hosts dig deep. The stranger the prompt, the less they sleep. From tiny questions, big ones too, from half-formed hunches to deja vu. If something odd is in your head, send it in, we'll chase the thread. My weird prompts, that's the close. From sloth, from man, from long-eared host. My weird prompts, until next time, stay curious, keep weird in mind.